Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, ranked number one podcast by Canadian financial advisors in the 2021 Environix Advisor Digital Experience Study. On today's episode, we put dividends in focus with portfolio manager Don Newman. Don explains his investment process to host Pat Bolland, noting he is trying to find good companies at reasonable prices that will maintain and grow dividends over time, while leveraging Fidelity's research process. Don examines the current inflationary landscape, looks at specific sectors such as banking, energy, and real estate REITs. Don also shares what he is keeping an eye on from a macro perspective, and explains the differences between Fidelity Dividend Fund and Fidelity Dividend Plus Fund. Today's podcast was recorded on September 29th, 2021, as a session during our recent Access 2021 digital event. Also, Don will be appearing on our live public webcast series, The Upside, on Thursday, October 21st. If you'd like to learn more about dividends and participate in a Q&A with Don, please head to fidelity.ca, then the Investor Education section to register for the webcast, or to register for the Upside newsletter, where you'll be notified of future webcasts and receive articles and videos to help make the most of your money. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Don, great to see you.
Let's walk through the process. How do you actually focus on dividends and the income, and give us your whole process?
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to do is just find good companies that at reasonable prices that can maintain and grow dividend over time, and just use the Fidelity research process to amplify that. So I think dividend investing is just a little different from sort of normal investing, because you focus a little more about on the company's capital allocation. So we want to find companies that are able to sort of grow organically, but you've also got to focus on how the capital is allocated. So how much money is spent on CapEx, how much money is spent on paying debt, and what's left over to pay dividends. So what I'm trying to do, at least with my process, is find a combination of this sort of the dividend yield and then the growth in earnings from the company. So it's sometimes you look at a company and say, okay, well, there's a 5% dividend yield, but that may not be the company you necessarily want to invest in because the yield is too high and they can't actually grow organically. So if you've got a 5% yield, but you've got 0% growth, the total return doesn't look that good. So what I'm really focused on in hoping using our terrific research department is focusing on companies, maybe that's a 3.5% dividend yield, 4% dividend yield, but the company can grow 8 or 10%. And if I can put those two together, I think about it, that is my total return. You get 8 or 10, you add the 3.5, maybe that's 13% total return. And that looks a lot better than a company maybe that's hamstrung by just simply a large dividend yield.
Okay, but nowhere in there did you talk about the cycle, where we are in the cycle, or interest rates, or any of those kinds of things. Do you consider the macro as part of the process?
Yeah, so at this point in the cycle, I think what I'm really focused on is taking the portfolio a little more up, sort of up quality, a little higher quality, and then it's very much focused on the earnings. So I would say last year when we look at the market, there was really, it had been beaten up, and there were really two big ways to win. It was an increase in the multiple, because multiples had really got knocked down, and then a big increase in earnings. I think at this point, you've seen a lot of the companies that were simply multiple stories. So the earnings weren't getting a ton better, but they were just really cheap. And that was a great way to play things, you know, for part of last year. They've really sort of come back up. And at this point in the cycle, what I want to be doing is just simply focusing on the earnings, using our analyst team and looking for companies that can, in a little bit slower environment, but still really good, sort of power through, put out the big earnings and keep growing the dividend yield and providing sort of a better income to investors.
So I was looking at the performance last year. You're suggesting that's mostly a PE pop.
I think there was a lot of it was a PE pop. So, but you know, a lot of it's just earnings too. So I think at the end of last year, I mean, one of the things, one of the reasons that dividend stocks did really well is you basically had this sort of, you know, at the start of the year, they didn't do too well because there wasn't a lot of sort of, you know, stay at home winners. Right. And in the dividend space. But when we got later in the year, once we got the vaccine going, there were two really big things that end up happening. One was you knew that a recovery was then going to happen. Yeah. So you got in, you were able to go and you were able to find a lot of companies that had just absolutely been beaten up, 30, 40% down. And you knew that they were going to survive, the balance sheets were going to recover, the businesses were going to be good for a long time. And there was a huge run in the PEs. And that's what I would have done with a lot of money sort of last fall in November. And then going into this year, it's very much a focus on, you know, the continuation of just that earnings growth. The economy continues to recover. There's fits and starts, but we are getting better. And then just really focused in on the improving earnings that a lot of these companies have.
Okay, but what's the difference actually between dividend and dividend plus, and is there a difference in the process? Yeah. There must be.
Yeah, so they are separate and distinct, and I try to keep them that way. And if you think about dividend plus, it's a little more of sort of, it has a little more infrastructure type feel. So it's a lot of Canadian and US real estate. It has, you know, a lot of electric utilities in it. And just for reference, if you go back sort of a decade and a half, it was our old income trust fund. Dividend is a little more of your what you'd see in a traditional dividend fund. So I'll have, you know, the banks, some insurance, and then there's a little more probably cyclical aspect of that. And you probably I have a little more of the sort of resource companies and that sort of thing in there. Mm.
Is the hunt for yield, you kind of suggested it earlier on, is the hunt for yield still on?
Yeah, it is amazing. Yields have been compressed in just about every asset class worldwide. So you think about a number of years ago, or you think about what you can get in on now, you can't get any money, you get no return on your bank account. A couple of years ago in 2009, if you had a GIC, you could at least sort of offset inflation. You had 2.5-3%. Yields on GICs are nowhere right now. I look around the world, you know, corporate bonds, probably 2-2.5%. High yield bonds in the US are been compressed to 3.5%. High yield bonds in Europe are down to 2.5%. But one of the areas that you can actually still get yield, and it's sort of somewhat of an anomaly, is a good dividend paying fund. So I look at the yields on the two funds that I run. You basically can go and buy a US junk bond and get 3.5%, or you can go and buy a really good blue chip company that has a dividend that's 3.5%, and it's in fact increasing with profits. So it seems like almost an anomaly out there of where you can actually find yield, and it's one of the few places that there is actually yield left in the world.
I want to go back to your process because I know you and I have talked in the past, and you talk about the buckets, the three buckets that you've got. Walk me through that.
Yeah.
So, and then I want you to tell me where we are kind of in the cycle.
Yeah. So I basically think of the fund, as you say, put into three buckets. So I've got the sort of the secular growers, the good dividend paying companies, and then sort of the value and cyclicals. And if we thought about it sort of, you know, late last year, I would have talked a lot about value and cyclicals, beaten up companies, beaten up resource companies, a lot of beaten up real estate would have been, you know, beaten up malls, things that were dead. Anything that was down 30 or 40%, you knew that was going to survive, the balance sheet was okay, you wanted to play that. At this point, as I said, a little bit of the PE trade has sort of played out. So I'm focusing a little more on sort of the just good dividend paying companies. The business is, you know, well run. We're going to continue to grow and continue to sort of improve that dividend stream to investors, and a little more of the sort of the secular growers. I'm not ignoring the other buckets. I still think there's very interesting things in this sort of the value cyclicals, but it's probably a little more tilted to just the good dividend payers and the secular other growers at this
point. How much does a dividend actually give you a cushion and protection, if you will, from downside if the market were to turn sour?
Yeah, and I think that's another really good point about dividend yields. Now, it doesn't work in a pandemic, as we found out, but in any sort of long, long period of time.
What do you mean it doesn't work in a pandemic? We had the sell-off through 2020, early 2020.
Yeah, it didn't. You saw dividend companies underperform greatly because they weren't stay-at-home winners, and the view was the world is sort of is ending. Mm. But if you don't, in any other kind of scenario, and now we're obviously sort of working our way out of a pandemic, you end up doing really well. And they provide that, you can at least say, listen, my company's temporarily come down in earnings a little bit. You know the earnings power is still there. You know the recovery's there. And at the same time, maybe I'm clipping a 5% dividend. And that's really good. That will protect you against inflation. You feel comfortable. You're getting that income. And at some point, the capital return comes your way.
Mm. You mentioned inflation. What are your thoughts? Is it transitory? Is it going to be here for a while?
This is actually really fascinating right now because you've got the bond market, and the bond market is basically the 10 years at 1.5. We've got projected out, there's like one dividend, one interest rate hike next year. And the market is kind of taking the Fed transitory inflation view. And it's based on sort of three sort of major things. So, there's demographics. People are getting older. They probably need more bonds. They're less spending. You've got technology, which is disinflationary. Things are always getting cheaper. Things are getting more efficient. And then you've got demographics, and people are getting older.
And people are getting older,
Even
through the pandemic, I don't know about your friends, but I know a lot more people having kids, too.
Yeah.
So it's working. It's a barbell thing.
Yeah. Excuse me. And then there's the third thing I mentioned, demographics, but just debt. And there's too much of it right now. So that should keep a sort of a lid on inflation. The interesting thing is, certainly, you and I live in the real world. And in the real world, the price of everything seems to be going up. So your housing, and I saw yesterday, U.S. housing prices are up 20% year over year. Canadian housing prices are up 20% year over year. And it's interesting because it's not just Toronto and Vancouver. It's across the board. It's Halifax. It's London, Ontario. Prices are up basically everywhere. Rents are up everywhere. You go to the grocery store. You try to buy a car. There's inflation in people's wages. So it's showing up sort of across the board. And one of the most important things I think people or investment advisors can do for their clients is, I don't know where bond yields are going, but I do know that prices are going up. And one of the most important things as an investment advisor you can do for your clients is protect their purchasing power. And one of the great ways you can do that is through an increasing stream of dividend income. So if you get 3.5%, 4% on a dividend and it's actually increasing, that can offset inflation. And if right now, if you've got money sitting in the bank, and even if inflation is transitory, prices went up 4-5% this year. If they go up 3% next year, you're in the hole by 7-8%. That's a huge loss of purchasing power. So having that increasing dividend stream to protect that purchasing power is a really, really important way to sort of offset the inflation that does seem to be in the system, whether it's transitory or not.
Okay, yeah, but you talk about the increasing dividend stream. Is there pressure on companies right now to increase their payouts in order to increase that stream?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the payouts. You've got to be very careful on payouts versus dividends. So payouts can get you in trouble if your payouts go up too high, because that leaves it's balance sheets that blow up companies, and if you take on too much debt. But if the earnings, and the one really nice thing is a lot of companies, they got through 2020 and it actually was fine. They brought down debt. They're feeling good about business. Business and earnings are actually better than ever. So what you're seeing now is a lot of companies saying, hey, you know what? Conditions are pretty good. We can actually increase that dividend and we don't have to increase the payout ratio to do it because earnings are actually going up. The payout ratio is constant, but our dividends can keep going up. And those are the type of businesses that I want to be invested in.
We've got some questions coming in from the audience. oil prices have continued to stay strong, as well as move further upwards recently. What are your thoughts on the energy sector nowadays, and do you expect dividends to rise in the sector?
Yeah, incredibly, really good question. So one of the things I thought was really interesting, last week I was listening to an interview by the CEO of Chevron, and what he was saying is that he looks at two really main indicators to sort of justify his investment. And the first one is just commodity prices. And what he's saying is, that is telling me I should be raising CapEx, commodity prices, supply and demand is tight, things are looking really good, I should be putting money into the ground. And the second constituent he listened to is shareholders. And what he said is, shareholders are not giving me the green light to invest. I've got a red light, there's energy transition going on right now, don't you dare put any more CapEx into the ground. So this is one of the few times in the history, whether it's ESG or just shareholders demanding their money back because people have destroyed a lot of value in the past, where you actually have increasing demand, tight supply and demand, and CapEx is not going into the ground. So you're not having the supply response, especially with the public companies, because shareholders are saying there's energy transition going on, give it back to me. The other thing I think is really interesting, there's a little bit of almost a disagreement going on between the bond market and the stock market on energy in general right now. Like, if you're in the bond market is going out and giving energy companies 30-year debt. So, hey, they're around for the next 30 years at sub 4% in covenant light. And the stock market is going and pricing energy companies at 3x cash flow, 15%+ free cash flow yields. Someone here is probably wrong. My guess is it's maybe a little bit in the middle, but my guess is right now that probably the equities are discounting too dim a future. Energy transition is wonderful, but it will take time. And I think what a lot of the focus on transition has done is prevented CapEx, almost needed CapEx, at least in the short term, from going in. So you could see higher prices for longer, and some of these energy companies will actually do quite well.
Okay, so increase in dividends.
And the money is going to come back because the free cash flow yields on these things are enormous right now. And the money is going to come back in the form of increased, some cases, buybacks, but dividends are also going up. And you've seen it a couple times even the last week.
You win on both sides, even if there's buybacks, though, don't you?
Yeah, well, if they're reducing their share count, their earnings are going up. So that works, too.
Okay, another question from the audience. Your strategies are primarily Canadian dividend-focused. Mm-hmm. You can say that's true or not.
Yep.
But are you allowed to own opportunities in foreign market? Well, now you got to answer the question.
Yeah, I can generally stay in North America. So I'd say, listen, I'm generally a stock picker, so I'm the asset allocation stuff I will leave to our asset allocation team. But right now, I probably have more Canadian concentration than I probably have in the last number of years. One, from a dividend investor point of view, dividends in Canada relative to the U.S., the dividend yields, are actually between a 20 and 30-year high. So the spread between the spread you're getting on buying Canadian versus the U.S. is about as good as it's been in the last 2 to 3 decades. So that's one thing. So you're getting a really good dividend in Canada. Two, you think about just fundamentals. And fundamentals for Canada and Canadian equities and Canadian dividend paying stocks have actually been pretty good. So if you got higher interest rates, and we're slowly working our way up, that's really good for financials. The country is very heavy in financials, so you win that way. A recovering economy with not a lot of CapEx going into resources right now, pretty good for resources. So that's another thing. And then you're winning on just the higher dividend yield. I will always, the U.S. is a great place to invest. I have a lot of U.S. real estate. I think it's terrific. And I can sort of toggle back between Canada and the U.S. when there's opportunity. This year, it's just felt like Canada's a little bit better of an opportunity.
You know, you started by saying that dividends are higher in Canada generally compared to the United States. Mm-hmm. Is that a tax effect? Is that because, you know, the retail investor can go out there and buy and get a better tax treatment here in Canada than you could in the United States?
Well, I mean, certainly the tax
treatment. Not you as a fund, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just valuations. If you look at valuations over the last decade, have really been pushed up up in the U.S. Now, it's wonderful as a Canadian investor, you get the dividend tax credit. So you get a dividend payment, you're getting a higher yield, and you're actually paying less tax too. So, I mean, for the sake of like money coming into your wallet, as a Canadian investor, investing in a Canadian, as long as the fundamentals are equal, you're always better off investing from an after-tax basis in a Canadian company. But I don't know if it's just that effect. I think there's valuation expansion in the U.S. has obviously been a lot greater over the last decade, mm-hmm. and the Canadian valuations haven't expanded as much. And I think that's
one of the reasons. You touched on financials a little bit. Talk to me about banks in Canada.
Yeah. Well, banks have had
especially in light of the recent election. I wonder if that changes
things. So banks in the last year have had it's been a sort of an unbelievable ride, at least in provisions for credit losses. So we got into the pandemic. And provisions for credit losses were expected, and they did. They went up an extreme amount. Earnings went down a lot. But then the sort of recovery took hold, and it turned out they didn't need all these provisions. So earnings rebounded wonderfully. And you now have a case where it's not about necessarily about provisions anymore. It's about growing loans. You get a little higher interest rates. You start getting a little bit of margin expansion eventually here. Your capital markets are terrific, wide open, and investment management's a really good place to be there, which the banks have good franchises in. The other really interesting thing about banks right now is it's sort of a capital return story. I think the earnings will be slowed down a little bit from the huge gains they've made in the last year. But from a capital return standpoint, the Canadian banks haven't raised dividends, and partly because of regulations in the past year, but earnings are as good or better than they've ever been. Capital ratios are as good or better than they've ever been. The banks typically like to have payout ratios between 40 and 50%. Right now, a lot of the banks are sitting at 40 or below. So they have a big runway to actually increase dividend, already very good dividend yields, sometime in the next, say, 6 months or so. And I think it's going to be, for dividend investors, a really good place
to
be.
But wasn't that a concern through the election that corporations, not just banks, would get taxed more, and therefore they were kind of holding everything back?
Yeah. I don't think, if you look at the tax that the government is proposing, sort of the surtax on profits, I think over $1 billion, it's impactful, but not that impactful. And then you've got to see if it actually goes through. Obviously, the idea of particularly targeting a particular industry may not go over too well. And there's a lot of people pushing back saying, okay, well, if you're going to tax them, you're going to end up hurting the consumer, because the consumer is going to, the banks are going to push through different fees, and I'm going to try to sort of claw it back. The end result is about a 2-3% hit on earnings if it goes through. The banks can probably push, that's well known at this point, and the banks will probably push through that.
Okay. Insurance companies? Sticking just with
insurance is an interesting one, because if you look at the company, it's almost a low-cost option on higher interest rates, because no one seems to believe that interest rates going up. I don't know if they're going up, but the companies certainly don't price that. So you look at most of the PE multiples, where in a lot of the market, they're close to all-time highs. Insurance companies haven't done that much over the last a decade or so. Their PE multiples have contracted to under 10. The dividend yields are 4 to 5%, and the earnings are actually growing quite nicely. And if rates actually do go up at some point, it's a wonderful hedge, because the market really has priced almost no increase in interest rates in there, and you get the companies for a sub 10 PE multiple and with a really good earnings yield. So I think it's a nice hedge, and it also works as a nice hedge against inflation.
A question from the audience. How much of your focus is on dividend payers versus growers?
I think, I touched on that a little bit earlier. It's very much a combination. So I kind of want the best of both worlds. If a nice dividend yield is good, but I want it to be growing over time. And as I say, I look at sort of the combination. For me, it's a total return type fund. So give me the yield, but I want the growth as well. I put the two together, assuming my PE multiple is sort of relatively constant. It's basically yield plus growth gets me a total return.
Quick question then, REITs.
Yep.
Are you up on the REITs?
Yeah, I've been a big fan of real estate this year, and I think for three reasons. You look, and they have done well. It's basically fundamentals are really good. Credit spreads are really tight, which is great for real estate, and interest rates have stayed relatively low. So I think if you talked to me last year, I would have talked to you about, listen, I'm going into the bombed out sections. I'm buying some, you know, really high quality A malls in the U.S. They're down 40%. They're not going bankrupt. Demand's going to come back. They've actually been really good, and I still hold a little bit of that. But right now, I think it's the time to just focus on where fundamentals are really, really good. And fundamentals in office, or sort of in industrial, fundamentals in multifamily, fundamentals in single family are about as the best they've ever been. And you, the other thing you sort of win with these type of companies and sectors is the leases are short duration. So it's a wonderful way to get sort of an inflation sort of hedge, because you think about it, the leases for sort of apartments or single family are 1 to 2 years. They roll over and they're rolling up a lot. And then industrial, the demand is about as good as it's ever been. And the leases may be about 5 years, but every time they roll over, they're rolling up and they're rolling up a lot. In Toronto, they may be rolling up 100%. Like it's just huge numbers. Rents were $7 a foot. They're going into the mid-teens. So it's great. The other wonderful thing about that, about those sectors in real estate, is from a public investor point of view, or from investing in equities, I can move the fund around and go where things are. If I look at some of the big pension funds in Canada, in the US, they've spent the last 20 or 30 years basically building up in concentration in large malls and large office buildings. So that's fine, but that's not necessarily where the fundamentals are these days and where the economy has gone. So they're stuck with billions and billions of dollars in possibly suboptimal investments that over time they know they need to move into these other sectors.
The ones where you are.
I can already move our funds there. And you're seeing a lot of the pension funds basically saying, we need to reduce office, we need to reduce retail. And where's that money going to flow? It's going to flow into the places, hopefully, I've got the funds already positioned in.
The ones you're in already, Don. Don, great to talk.
Thanks very much, Pat.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thank you. See you tomorrow.